More than 10 million people all did the same thing in one day last week. They subscribed to Disney Plus, the new TV and movie streaming service. The competitor for other services, including Netflix and HBO Now, offers a host of historic Disney movies, as well as some new original content.
Freeze!
Go!
Drop your weapons.
No, pardon. Sorry, I didn't mean to alarm.
This is Dr. Pershing. Please excuse his lack of decorum. His enthusiasm outweighs his discretion. Please lower your blaster.
Have them lower theirs first.
We have you 4-1.
It's a scene from The Mandalorian, a Star Wars spin-off TV series that people can only watch on Disney+. Joan E. Solzman has been covering the launch of Disney+. She's a senior reporter on tech and media for CNET. Joan, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here.
Well, how big a deal was this launch? Sounds like a big number of people signed on.
It was such a big launch that even though Disney had been planning this service for years, hyping it for months, they still didn't anticipate how many people would be the demand that would be coming in to sign up. And they had all these glitches on the first day, all these people complaining about not being able to log in or seeing titles drop out or streaming getting buffered. So it was bigger than even Disney anticipated.
There are a lot of streaming services out there. We'll talk about some of the competition in a bit, but what is Disney offering on Disney Plus that might lure people in?
Essentially, the idea is that Disney Plus will be the streaming home for everything that you can think of Disney. So that means Marvel, Star Wars, Pixar, Disney Studios stuff, whether it's live action or Frozen sort of things, animated, and also Nat Geo. The idea is that not immediately at launch, but eventually everything that you can think of in the Disney theatrical and video universe will be on Disney Plus, one place to go, one-stop shop.
And people may know that Disney owns properties like Star Wars, though, you know, the Disney label isn't usually associated with that historically. But also Disney's bought properties like, I think, Fox Entertainment. So The Simpsons run would be on Disney Plus.
Exactly. And The Simpsons is actually one of the most popular titles being streamed on Disney right now based on what the app shows is trending. Because of Disney's gigantic takeover of Fox, that unlocks not only things like The Simpsons, but these other things like edgier stuff like FX or movies, R-rated movies like Deadpool. The way that Disney's sort of dealing with the less than family friendly, R-rated, edgier content is that kind of stuff is going to live on Hulu, which is now majority owned and operated by Disney as well. That's going to be the home for the adult oriented stuff, and Disney Plus is where you find the PG-13 and softer family friendly things.
And that takes me to another point. I would have thought of Hulu as a competitor to a streaming service like Disney Plus, but given the convoluted nature of media ownership, they're actually at the same table.
Yeah, and you know, it's less convoluted than it used to be. It used to be that Hulu was owned by 4 media companies, and now it's narrowed down to just 1. The idea with Disney owning Hulu and Disney Plus, as well as ESPN Plus, is that they can create, they have created a discounted bundle where you can get all 3 of those at once.
Talking to Joan E. Solzman from CNET, looking at the launch of Disney+, one of the latest in the growing number of streaming services out there. Joan, for a while, it was just pretty much Netflix, right?
And Netflix is still by far the dominant force in video streaming. Netflix has more than, I think they're predicting to have more than 160 million members by the end of this year. You know, Disney, they made a gigantic splash by having those 10 million signups within little more than 24 hours. But, you know, 10 million is a far cry from 150, 160. So Netflix is definitely still the dominant player. Nothing's going to change that for a while, but what will be interesting to see is how that subscriber growth starts to change as more direct competition enters the landscape.
Is it, I've seen some cases of this, is it a thing where, okay, Netflix used to have this property and that property, but now that other company wants to take their TV shows and go home and host their own service, is Netflix going to start losing the stuff that's been bringing people in?
Yes. depends, though, exactly on what it is that brings you in. You know, Netflix has been anticipating that this was an eventuality, that eventually TV was going to be internet delivered and programmers like Disney and others would stop accepting all the millions of dollars that Netflix was giving them for their titles and keep them to themselves. And that's what really precipitated the entire Netflix original strategy, is that Netflix needed to be able to own its own content, be producing its own content, so it didn't have to be, you know, it didn't have to exist at the whims of other programmers. But it's significant. You know, Netflix entered into a deal with Disney, I think, 5 years ago, so that for the last 3 years, Netflix has been the one place that you go to stream all those blockbuster Disney movies. And some of those movies are still on Netflix today. It's going to be a big change. And it's hard to quantify exactly, you know, how many people come into Netflix specifically for those Disney properties. It's hard to understand how much of a threat that is to keeping customers now that those things are going away. But it's certainly a really high profile kind of content that's not going to be available for people anymore. It'll draw people to somebody else.
Another big name streamer is HBO. They've got HBO Go and Now and this and that. I don't know how it all fits together, but how important is HBO in the streaming world?
I think that HBO is going to be launching HBO Max in May. And I think besides for Disney Plus, HBO Max is going to be the other streaming service to really watch as a competitive threat to Netflix. They're putting a lot of firepower behind HBO Max. They're going to be investing a lot in a pipeline of originals. And, you know, HBO has really great content and a wonderful brand halo like Disney did. You know, people associate HBO with really high quality content. What AT&T and Time Warner, the owners of HBO and HBO Max, are doing now is they're diversifying that content away from maybe what you traditionally think of HBO being sort of adult-oriented, edgy, you know, maybe a lot of nudity and some not-so-family-friendly language. Also, obviously, has kids stuff. But they're diversifying into things that you don't associate with HBO, like Friends is going to be there. The Big Bang Theory is going to be there. And I think that will be kind of confusing for consumers. Where do you go for these things that you don't associate with the HBO name?
Let's confuse people more, because Okay. Now we've got networks trying to make a go of their own streaming services. And, you know, hey, we've got a new Star Trek franchise, but you can only get it by streaming ours. How successful has that been for individual broadcast networks?
You know, it's hit or miss. It depends on, you know, not every streaming service is created equal, and not every fan base is created equal as a niche streaming service audience. So it really kind of depends on what the content proposition is, how well the tech actually works. Disney Plus was a good example of how it's not easy to get the tech right out of the gate if you don't have a background in having a streaming app. But what we have seen is that these services that are hinged on a linear network that people recognize, a lot of it depends on how all in the company is willing to go on that streaming option. Disney and soon HBO Max are examples where the companies are really investing heavily in shoring those up as the future of those networks. Other ones, you know, it's kind of an also-ran afterthought if you want to sign up as an a la carte option. So what we've seen, yeah, is the companies that really dedicate a lot to these services are the ones that are most likely to bring people in.
Talking to CNET reporter Joan E. Solzman about the new TV and movie streaming service from Disney and where it fits into the world of streaming. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you one of the, 10 million people who gave Disney Plus a shot on the first day? Have you been watching it so far? Do you stream with Netflix or HBO or one of the networks? Are you scratching your head trying to figure out what to get? Oh, yeah, Amazon Prime. That's another one. Are you puzzled by how to sort this all out so you can watch the stuff you want to watch? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with CNET reporter Joan E. Solzman about the new TV and movie streaming service Disney Plus and where it fits into the wild world of content streaming. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you sign up for the new Disney service? Is it part of your menu of options for online streaming, or have you steered clear? Are you puzzled by what's out there? Are you going to wait to see how it all shakes out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Tyler is with us in Sparta. Tyler, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Tyler?
Yes, yeah, so I got Disney Plus through a Verizon subscription because they offered a free year subscription to Disney Plus. So I'm wondering how many of those 10 million subscribers came through that route.
Tyler, thanks for the call. I don't know if we have exact numbers, Joan, but is that part of the story here?
It's definitely part of the story. Disney did not disclose how many of those 10 million signups were through this very significant Verizon deal where anybody who has a Verizon Unlimited plan gets comped a free year of Disney Plus. So we don't know. We don't know if that's the majority of signups. We don't know if it's some sort of minority, but you have to presume that it's a significant number. And we also have to remember that anybody that signed up on that first day, whether it was through Verizon or whether it was simply signing up without any sort of promotion, everybody gets access to at least a 7-day free trial. So all of those 10 million signups that happened in that first period, they were all free. So nobody at that point had ever had to consider, is this really worth paying for? But it's important to keep in mind that Disney's pricing Disney Plus at $7 a month if you pay the monthly rate. That's a significant discount to Netflix's most popular plan and even Netflix's cheapest tier. So it'll be interesting to see how many of those 10 million stick around, if they grow. We won't find that out until next year. Probably is going to be the next time if we get another number. But so far, we don't know if the Verizon promotion was the real driver of that demand.
So there could be people out there right now in the midst of a 168-hour binge session planning to cancel when that free trial is over, potentially.
Yeah, and what we saw on it launched, Disney Plus launched on November 12th. That was a Tuesday. What we saw the following Tuesday was a huge spike in Google searches, Disney, how to cancel Disney Plus or Whoa. Cancel Disney Plus. So clearly people wanted to know what they needed to do before getting charged. But it's really hard to extrapolate from those sort of overall aggregated trends how much of a 10 million signup pool of people decided they wanted to churn, which basically means opt out. We'll have to wait and see.
Tyler, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Richard with us in Madison. Richard, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I'm wondering how it's going to work with aggregators like Roku, for instance, where they provide service to any number of the different providers, and if Roku is going to kind of get in on one price fits all or one price, you know, fits a number of different providers or something like that.
Richard, thanks for the call. Yeah, Joan.
Yeah, that's a great point. So while there's this burgeoning competition to deliver streaming content to people, there's also this sort of underlying current of people competing to be the place that you go to figure out where the heck you're supposed to watch what you want to watch. Roku is a really good example of a company that wants to be that sort of one place to search. You can find where that title is. It'll do the work for you. Another company that's trying to position itself in that place is somebody that's kind of straddling both lines. It's Apple. Apple, a week and a half before Disney Plus launched, was Apple's big foray into original streaming content, Apple TV Plus. But Apple TV Plus doesn't have a library. It only has original content. And what Apple's strategy is, it wants its Apple TV app to be where you can not only watch its own streaming content, but also where you can rent things. You can get, if you have HBO as a streaming service, it'll feed into that too. And that way, Apple's TV app will become the default place you go to watch all of your streaming services. The complication there is that we have a bunch of different people trying to be the one place that helps you find everything. And it's not clear who, if there's going to be one dominant player yet, that really serves that need.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Joan E. Solzman from CNET. Disney Plus kicked off last week, the new streaming service, joining many other streaming services. Still time for you to join in with what you have decided to do when it comes to streaming, what confusion you might still have. You can call in at 800-642-1234. Joan, when I was a kid, the question was, can I angle the antenna to pick up stations from Toledo, Ohio and Windsor, Ontario? Then it was, you know, basic or extended or super deluxe cable. Now it seems like there's so many decisions. Which streaming? How do I get it? Through Roku or my phone or my smart TV? Is there going to just be this point of consumer confusion overload?
I think what's happening right now, it's a pendulum swing. You know, with cable, that's the king of all bundles, right? You pay a high price, but you get more content all bundled together than you could possibly ever imagine or want. The thing that made that easy is that you only had one thing to turn on to find out what was out there for you to watch. But as we've seen these individual streaming services arise, this disaggregation has happened. And we're getting to the point where we're going to sort of reach that peak disaggregation where there's so many different services all sprinkled about with kind of confusing logic about where you find what. That what the next stage is going to be is a re-aggregation, where you'll see companies like Apple try to be that centralized place where you can at least figure out where everything is, and if you want, you can stream it there. HBO Max, I think, is going to be trying to replicate that big bundle where you can get every single kind of streaming video that you want, be it live stuff or, you know, back seasons of a show. I think HBO Max is also going to go for that. So while people like to complain about their cable service, the ease of it is it was one place you go to. We're getting into the part where there's a million places it seems like you have to go to. I think we're going to start swinging back to that aggregation, everything bundling up together again soon.
Let's go back to our callers. Rick is with us in Holman. Rick, hi.
Well, good afternoon. My question is for us old buffers out here that don't have a internet TV, how am I supposed to stream anything?
Rick, thanks a lot for the call. A lot of people out there, Joan, in Rick's situation, they have an old-fashioned TV. It is not internet capable now.
Yeah, so anytime, most of these streaming services try to have wide device support. And so, for example, Netflix, most of their viewing is on large screen TVs. It's the biggest screen in the house. About 70% of Netflix's viewing is on a television. So if you want to stream content, you don't have to watch it on a TV. If you have a mobile phone with a mobile connection, you can stream there. You can always stream on a computer, on the web. But, you know, most people want to watch these really, you know, well-produced shows on the best screen they have, and that's a television. But if you don't have a smart TV, you can. There are tons of devices. You know, we talked about Roku earlier in the program. Roku is a device that you can hook up to many TVs. It depends on how long ago you bought your TV, what kind of connections it has. But there are a lot of, they're called over-the-top streaming boxes. Roku's one. Google's Chromecast is another. Amazon Fire TV is another. There's a lot of makers that essentially can turn your not smart TV into a smart TV that can stream if you have a regular internet connection into your home.
Thanks for that call. Good luck. Alex joins us now in Madison. Alex, hi.
Yeah. Hi. So I was wondering about with all the streaming services that we have now with Netflix and now Disney Plus. How do you keep up with the forever changing options? For example, a movie will get pulled down after a certain amount of time on Netflix. How do you keep up with all of this? All these changes.
Alex, that's a great question, Joan.
It's really hard because these deals they're decided years in advance. They're not opaque, they're not transparent. They're very opaque. Even even people like me who cover it regularly, I don't really know when things are coming or going from services until it actually happens. So unfortunately, it's, I guess maybe the light on the horizon is that Disney has an underlying, for example, Disney has an underlying strategy that it wants its service to be the place where you can presume that you'll be able to get pretty much everything Disney right there. Even with trying to reach that kind of golden ideal, it's still going to fall short. For example, part of the pre-existing Netflix deal that has been funneling all those Disney movies to Netflix for these last 3 years, that deal had a farther out window wherein in, I think, 2026, 5 years, 6 years after Disney Plus has launched, there's going to be a period of time where some of these blockbuster Disney movies leave Disney Plus and go back to Netflix temporarily. So it's really, I wish I could tell you that it's going to get better, and maybe it will, but right now it seems like it's going to continue to be really confusing for the time being. And it's because programmers make so much money licensing their content to streaming services. It was a really big stream of revenue for a long time, and it's only now that they're starting to try to pull themselves out of these deals and this system of making money so that they can have full ownership of what they've created.
Joan, as we wrap up, what's the next piece of the puzzle you're watching for in the streaming world?
Yeah, well, we've got a little bit of a break. We had Apple TV Plus launch at the beginning of the month, and then Disney Plus right after that. We've got a little bit of a break, but then next spring there's going to be this flood of other services. Not only is HBO Max going to be launching in May, but there is a similar streaming service from NBC Universal called Peacock that's going to be launching a little bit before that. And then there's this outlier called Quibi, which is bankrolled by all the major studios. It's being run by Disney's former head executive, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and it's spending lots of money to get big names like Guillermo del Toro and Steven Spielberg and all these other high-end film creators to make mobile-only short-form content. It's going to be very interesting to see exactly the reaction to that, but that's going to be the next wave when your streaming options are going to get even more complicated.
Joan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Joan E. Solzman with CNET, looking at the latest in the streaming world.